This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic from Bloomberg Radio.
We are so delighted to welcome to Bloomberg Michael Dell, of course, Chairman CEO of Dell Technologies. Keep in mind, when he first started his company back in 1984, it was Dell Computer Corporation. He was 19, and his journey on creating this company, it's in his new book. It's called Play Nice But Win, A CEO's Journey from Founder to Leader, and we're going to talk about that book in just a moment. Michael, joining us from Austin, Texas. Michael, welcome back to Bloomberg. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you all.
Hey, listen, we are going to talk about the book. We've got to, though, ask you about the big tech picture at this point, because we've seen a lot of pressure on big tech companies in the stock market. There's a lot of big tech companies talking about, hey, the whole world is becoming digital, the digitalization of everything that we do, and that pace has just been picked up as a result of the pandemic. Yet tech companies right now are forecasting long-term growth a little above GDP. You guys, your outlook is for 3-4% annual sales growth. How do we square those two, that we are increasingly becoming digital, but growth is not so dynamic?
Well, you know, I think it will be a sector that continues to outgrow the economy. And, you know, if you think about the way technology is being used, it's now going way beyond the IT departments. And, you know, it used to be when we were selling things, it was to the IT departments. And now, you know, technology is a fulcrum for everything. So I think as a sector, you know, it'll outgrow GDP probably by a significant amount. You know, we'll see. But certainly, you know, this year has been great for our company, 15% growth in the last quarter. And second half is looking strong as well.
Yeah, and shares this year significantly higher as well, Michael. I'm wondering about how much that IT spend from companies around the world was pulled forward during the COVID-19 pandemic, and if you have concerns about slowing growth since so much of that spend was pulled forward.
If you think about this from the perspective of a company or an organization, sort of the only thing that worked during the lockdowns was digital technology. And so companies are just accelerating all their investments in that. And if you think about hybrid work, you know, that feels like it's becoming more of a permanent way that work gets done. And that's an enormous demand stimulant for us, and certainly a great, you know, tailwind. There are, you know, 700 million PCs out there on the day that, you know, Windows 11 gets introduced that don't run Windows 11. So you put all that together with the expansion, you know, feels like, and certainly there've been supply chain challenges, even mm-hmm. though we're shipping record numbers of machines, more than we've ever shipped, you know, it feels like the demand growth is going to continue in a pretty robust way here.
Well, help me with those supply chain challenges, Michael. I mean, computing is on the long list of industries that have been hurt by the semiconductor shortage at this point. When do we start to see that supply and demand get back in step?
Well, it takes about 3 years to build a new semiconductor plant. So, you know, when did the, you know, we're only 18 months into this. And yeah. So if you believe there's a demand acceleration that's significant, you know, it's going to take a while for supply to catch up with demand. You know, we're all challenged by that. You know, as I said, even though we shipped more last quarter than ever, the backlogs are still at record high levels.
Is there panic buying, though, do you think, because of concerns over supply chain, that we're seeing some of that, you know, double ordering being done by companies just to make sure that they've got what they need? And as a result, at some point, we'll see some kind of bubble burst as a result of it?
You know, we've been watching the cancellation rates very carefully, and we have incredible data on this, and we haven't really seen that. You know, what we've heard from our customers and partners is that our supply chain is generally functioning better than others. And while they might not, you know, like the lead time that we give them, it's highly predictable and reliable. And, you know, haven't really seen, you know, signs of distress there in terms of, you know, people ordering and then canceling, and, you know, it hasn't been a factor.
Hey, Michael, the chip shortage has revived talks of European or U.S. hardware or chip manufacturing. I'm wondering if you think that's necessary at this point?
I think it's a good thing. You know, we have not really had, you know, industrial policy, right, has been a kind of dirty phrase that nobody wants to talk about. But when you have China investing so aggressively in these strategic industries and, you know, the US and Europe not, it creates a real challenge. And, you know, the theme in supply chain has been resilience and moving from just in time to just in case. And, you know, given the importance of all these industries to the future and everything that's going on in 5G, I think having government support to create the infrastructure, you know, for our technology future, semiconductors being an enormous part of that, yeah, I would be in support of that.
Hey, Michael, one more thing on supply chain. I mean, you guys seem to have done a better job at kind of managing your supply chain than some of your peers and keeping yourself supplied with components. How is that possible? And I am curious if you're eating some of the higher costs here, or ultimately are higher costs being passed off to consumers?
Well, there's definitely been component and cost inflation, and you know, that's something that we all feel, and it's a shared experience, if I can call it that. You know, we have had a supply chain strength in our company for decades, and I think it's proven itself well, you know, during the last year or so. You know, when a lot of companies outsource things, I think they also outsourced in many cases, a complete understanding of all the components that go in to these machines. And you're seeing instances where a, you know, $50,000 product is held up by a $1 part. You really have to have a detailed understanding of the entire supply chain in order to run it efficiently and effectively.
Hey, your book is a great read, Play Nice But Win, and it talks about your journey from founder to leader, and you really weave in the creation of your company, but then you also weave in taking the company private. It's really a fun read. You talk about acquisitions and the transformations you were making at your company. Now, one of the things that came up recently at an investor day is what you expect in terms of further M&A for the company, and also some rumors of maybe taking it private again. Is that a possibility?
Don't have any plans to do that.
Okay.
We did talk about our capital allocation. You know, now that a couple of days ago, we got a double notch upgrade by S&P to investment grade. You know, we're doing a large share buyback, going to issue a dividend starting in the first quarter. And, you know, we paid down an enormous amount of debt and feel really great about how the company's positioned going forward. And look, you know, what we said is that, you know, don't hold your breath for sort of massive M&A like the kind that we did, you know, when we did the largest acquisition merger ever in tech. It'll be on a lot smaller scale.
Well, what are the areas of interest that pique your interest? What are the areas of tech right now where you think there is an opportunity to expand to?
So, you know, we have an enormous business in a huge TAM in cloud infrastructure and all things, you know, end user computing and, you know, software defined, you know, data centers, and really enabling our customers to accelerate their digital transformation. Multi-cloud, you know, security, edge, 5G, these are all new multi-billion dollar businesses that we're building. And we'll do that organically. We'll do it with partnerships, and we'll do it with, you know, selected acquisitions to help us accelerate.
Hey, Michael, I want to get back to the book and talk a little bit about it. As Carol mentioned, it is a great read. The title really struck me, Play Nice But Win. The idea of playing nice is something I think a lot of parents tell their kids, but your parents said play nice but win. How did that stick to you?
Yeah, it's one of my first memories as a child, and this is what my parents told me and my two brothers when we would go out in the street and play ball. And it's been a relatively straightforward and kind of unifying principle that we've talked about at Dell a lot. And look, I think dealing forthrightly with integrity and you know, honesty and, you know, building a reputation over time matters and, you know, pays, you know, dividends over time. And look, winning is a part of this. It's who we are. And you've got to balance the two and do it successfully. I think I've been able to do that for the most part. The book talks about, you know, all of that, and, you know, many occasions when it didn't exactly go the way I'd planned, but we learned from it along the way. And, you know, that's what life is all about.
So was it always easy to play nice when you were dealing with the likes of someone like Carl Icahn? I mean, it's really kind of fun, the passages in the book, to be quite honest, and dinner at his house. And it was interesting to hear the exchange where you were like, you know, what are you going to do with the company? What's your strategy? But was it hard to deal with someone like that? Or what was that experience like?
It was very hard. You know, I didn't really have much experience dealing with somebody who would just go on television and lie. You know, that's not something I had experienced very often in my business career. But, you know, ultimately, as I talked about in the book, I did go to his house and confront him, and, you know, really saw that he didn't have any plan whatsoever for the company. And to him, it was just a big poker game. You know, it turned out to be way more difficult than I thought, as was chronicled on Bloomberg Television and Radio very extensively.
I remember it.
It was a story that never ended until it did. You know, fortunately, we were able to accelerate our transformation. Our shareholders got some of the benefits of our transformation if we were successful, which we turned out we were, without taking on any of the risk. And you know, I learned how to face down Carl Icahn. So there you go.
Yeah. Hey, I'm wondering, Michael, if you miss the days of running a company that's private, that doesn't have a report card available to you each and every day, Monday through Friday, from, you know, 9:30 to 4 every day, where you watch the company's stock move. Because you do talk a little bit in the book about the way that big swings in the company's stock would make you feel, and the way that you thought that analysts and investors were missing it. Do you miss the days of not running a public company?
Well, I've done both, right? And you know, the key for us was really putting the company on a different trajectory. And back in 2012 and 2013, the markets really didn't give us permission to go invest in those new areas. You know, now I think we're in a different spot, new capabilities, new growth rate, and new trajectory. And, you know, we also reignited that entrepreneurial spirit, which was the formation of the company, and very much kept that alive even as we've transitioned back to being public again.
Well, you know, it's interesting too, and we've really leaned on, I think even more so during the pandemic, our leaders, right, of companies to help us get it through. I think about Black Lives Matter. And, you know, one of the things we wanted to ask you, and it feels like from reading your book, you don't play around too much or careful around politics. And I can understand that for CEOs. But, you know, your home state of Texas, you know, I have a lot of family in Texas. You seem to be, you know, you really love that state. And you write a lot about it in your book. How do you feel about things like the abortion law and the voting rights one? Would you have spoken out about?
Yeah, I have spoken out about voting rights. And certainly we've communicated with our team members about, you know, some of the recent laws. Look, I would much rather see our policymakers focus on education and infrastructure and broadband and, you know, the things that will help the state continue to be successful. And as we've communicated to our team members, you know, our belief is that, you know, they should have more access to healthcare, not less.
Mm-hmm. Do you worry, though, about, you know, some of these issues that it'll hurt Dell's ability to attract talent, especially in Austin or generally speaking?
Haven't seen that problem yet. We'll see how it plays out. And, you know, our company will go where the talent is. And, you know, let's see also how the courts, you know, rule on these things. And, you know, I think there's still a lot that we don't know about how this plays out.
Hey, Michael, I want to stick on talent because we have spoken to executives in recent months who've said, hey, the labor crunch that we're seeing, it's really across the spectrum from hourly employees all the way up to executives. Have you had to raise wages to attract and retain talent?
Well, you're always adjusting, you know, compensation and benefits. I'm pretty pleased with our attrition. You know, our data says, you know, we're in the, you know, kind of lower quartile of attrition. So haven't really had an enormous challenge there, as I know many companies have. And look, you know, our job is to create an inspiring and, you know, passionate environment where people can do their very best work. And we attract a lot of young people into our company, giving them those opportunities. I think if we keep doing that, you know, we'll be just fine.
EMC, it is a company that we know. We've all talked about it. You know, the king of growing storage device market. We know cloud computing is changing all of this. You know, we were talking with some of our colleagues, a former EMC executive telling them that EMC was once the last great storage companies. There'll never be another one. So what is the future of that market in your view? And how do you think Dell specifically can benefit from that?
Well, the interesting thing is if you peel back the onion on just about anything that's going on, you were talking about crypto earlier, mm-hmm. decentralized finance, autonomous vehicles, you know, just pick your new thing that's happening. Behind all of that is an enormous amount of data. And, you know, it turns out you need a lot of cloud infrastructure, no matter where it is, and you need a lot of data to make all these things happen. And so, you know, as the number one company in the world that provides all of that, we're seeing some really nice growth in those areas. So I think the world's kind of figuring out, yeah, public cloud is a thing, but it's not just the public cloud, it's multi-cloud, it's also the edge, and there's enormous growth going on as everything in the world becomes intelligent and connected, and now with 5G, the distributed computing world is even more distributed. All that creates enormous opportunities for us.
Have to say that, you know, we want to talk a little bit about innovation. We've got a few minutes left. Mike Bloomberg stopped by my desk. I was working. I have a huge pile of books. And he's like, do you read all of these? And I'm like, I try. I said, but one book I'm reading right now is Michael Dell's new book. And he's like, I know Michael. And he goes, really smart guy, really innovative guy. And it was just kind of interesting. And he talked about, you know, how you reinvented your company. When it comes to innovation, reinvention, what are the technologies that you think we should be focusing on? You know, what gets you excited? Is it crypto? Is it AI? Is it something? Is it the metaverse? What do you think is interesting? Because reading your book, I mean, you've been involved in the tech space since you were a kid. And I just wonder what really catches your attention now.
Yeah, you know, the power of AI to, again, use all this data to upend and reinvent every part of our world and society is incredible. I think, you know, there are going to be incredible innovations in the intersection of the biological and computational sciences in all the areas you talked about.
Yeah.
It's hard to predict, exactly how all these things are going to evolve, but you know, when you have these powerful ingredient technologies coming together, and look, you have an enormous amount of risk capital right now that's going after these problems and even harder hard tech problems. I think that the future is super bright for humankind.
Well, I wonder from specifically a hardware perspective, given your experience in hardware, how this data is manifested, how these experiences are manifested when it comes to hardware. Is it smart glasses? Is it wearable technology? Is it traditional PCs? I mean, in terms of hardware, what excites you?
Well, you know, the world is really a combination of hardware and software and, you know, AI and machine learning. And you kind of need all three of these. Most of the data in the future won't be sort of, you know, human to machine, it'll be machine to machine. And this is this idea I was talking about earlier about everything becoming intelligent. And if you step back and you look at what's happening, again, technology is kind of the fulcrum for all progress in the world. And that means that, there's just going to be a lot more data. It's got to be turned into insights and actions and results, which means, companies have to express their competitive advantage with software and with AI. But of course, AI is eating the software is eating the hardware, but it runs on something, right? And we create that system, that multi-cloud system that allows all those capabilities to be created.
Listen, Michael, we've got to run. Thank you so much, though, for carving out such a big chunk of our time, and we wish you well with the book and with your continued success at the company. Thank you so much. Michael Dell, he's chairman and CEO of Dell Technologies. His book, Play Nice, But Win, A CEO's Journey from Founder to Leader, and even the appendix of the book is just things he believes in that, helped him in his success. So it's a really great bunch of pieces of advice. Great conversation.
Yeah, it was, and a great book, the book out today, mm-hmm. Play Nice, But Win by Michael Dell.